Listen to this talk. Okay, so I was saying that the hard contributions are very small, actually. They are about 2% at the LAC. So this is important, but also it is reassuring. Why? Because these effects are the ones that are most likely mistreated in the infinite top mass limit, because hard effects will be sensible to the top loop. So the fact that these effects are small is a positive point, because somehow it tells us that what we are doing is not bad. So why is this soft virtual approximation so good? Well, the reason is very simple, and is that because one can say, okay, but you are at the LHC, you are considering X mass, a light X mass, so you are far from threshold. Why should this approximation, which is supposed to work when you are close to threshold, why should it work? Well, the reason is that you are computing a partonic cross-section, and that then you have to convolute with Parton distributions. And Parton distributions are strongly peaked at a small x. So basically, when you weight your Partonic cross-section with the luminosity is strongly peaked in the threshold region. So you almost always evaluate your cross-section close to threshold. That's the reason why this approximation works so well. So with this in mind, we can say, okay, these soft effects are important. What I say is that the contributions from real corrections that are subdominant in the limit, in the soft limit, that is when z goes to 1, play a less significant effect. This is what I'm saying. When you Mellin transform the coefficient function, you get log of n, that now I will show. So somehow the hard effects are 1 over n suppressed, because when you Fourier transform something which is constant, when you Mellin transform something which is constant, you have 1 over n. So in the large n limit, which is conjugated to the threshold limit in Mellin space, you get small effects. So I was saying, so we say the increased cross-section is dominated by soft and collinear emission, so one can say, okay, this contribution from multiples of fluon emission beyond the accuracy of the fixed order calculation can be important. So,
short question, so then you may very detailed analysis for the XU, but can look at some other processes
Yes.
and in comparison with other processes, it is very special,
I think,
but also
I mean, it's a general issue, I think, because
bar production.
well, it depends. Here it's especially important because you have gluons, then you have this very steep behavior, but also if it's dominated by gluon, then you should get the same behavior.
It would be interesting
Yes. Okay, so
was done already? Yes.
I think
people know that TT bar production and heavy quark production is these logarithms are threatened, and they are important.
Yeah, but see, but my understanding is that to calculate the soft part is easier.
Yeah, of course you need the virtual. I mean, without Robert calculation, you wouldn't do anything. I mean, so that's in fact, I put his work at the top of the list, because without that you couldn't.
And that for the top threshold is very hard.
Well, this is two loop. Okay, so in n space, these large logs appear in this way as alpha s to the n log of n. And these corrections can be resummed to all orders. The coefficient function can be organized in this way. You have a part, which is a hard part, which is evaluated at the hard, where alpha s is evaluated at the hard scale. And then you have a form factor where you organize leading log next to leading log, next to next to leading log, and so on. The formalism is well established. This dates back to the papers by Sterman and by Catani and 32. So at next to next to leading logarithmic accuracy, you have to deal with three new coefficients. One is the coefficient which is called D2, which controls soft gluon emission at large angles. One is the virtual L2 loop, somehow, here. And one is the coefficient A3. Now, these two coefficients you can just compute by expanding this formula and comparing to the fixed order result. And that was done. The coefficient A3 is known numerically. So we can go for the first time to... D2 is a coefficient that appears only at next to next to leading logarithmic accuracy and controls soft gluon emission at large angles. So in order to get it, you have to expand your formula, compare term by term with you Mellin transform the next to next to leading order coefficient in the soft limit, and you identify these coefficients. And
these A and C and things, those are the coefficients in the expansion of G1 and G2 and G3.
Sorry?
I don't see the definitions of...
No, I mean, I didn't put the definition. I assume that you know them. Okay, G1 depends on A1, G2 depends on A1 and A2, and C1. No, C1 is here, so A1 and A2 here you have.
This is a standard
classification. Not really, but almost. Okay, so not really. Okay, but... Okay, I mean, I didn't want to go into many details. Assume that this up to next to leading log, this is a standard classification. When you want to go one order higher, you need these additional coefficients. What I'm saying is that you can control them.
These are all process dependent, is that right?
No. The coefficients A and the coefficient A is depends only on the channel. I mean, on here we are in the gluon channel, so you have the coefficient A for the gluon, A1, A2, and A3. Actually, the coefficient A, one can show that is exactly the most singular term in the Altarelli-Parisi kernel, either the quark or the gluon. So actually, this is the way that in which Vogt extracted this coefficient, by taking these approximated kernels they constructed with Van Nerven and looking at the most singular term in which is the log n term, somehow the one that multiplies the plus distribution. So I would like to stress that in this way we can achieve this accuracy, and this is the first calculation that was ever performed to this level. So I show this plot, which was already shown before by Robert. So here we study the k-factors, defining the k-factor with respect to the leading order cross-section computed at central values of the scale. And the bands are defined by varying mu f and mu r simultaneously and independently between 1/2 and 2, but avoiding that their ratio exceeds 2, essentially. So here are the leading order next to leading order next to next to leading order results that were already shown by Robert, and here are the corresponding resummed results that are always matched to the fixed order. That is leading log to leading order, next to leading log to next to leading order, next to next to leading log to next to leading order. So what I stress is that the effect is here. If you compare the most accurate prediction with the next to leading order result, you get an increase for a light x which is about 6%, so it's not very large, but still it's larger than these hard effects that I was saying before, which are only 2%. The scale uncertainty is very slightly, is not dramatically reduced. It's in this way, by defining scale uncertainty in this way, I get something like 8%.
If you relax the prediction that KFO chi r only can vary by a factor of 2, would that have a
not very much. This is somehow Okay, one can, of course, it's a matter of taste. Okay, this is one should say that this is only a way to estimate the uncertainty from missing higher orders. And of course, here you see already that this way, this approach doesn't work because these two bands do not overlap. Nevertheless, this band and this band overlap, this one overlapped with this one, so somehow this gives an idea of a convergence of the perturbative expansion.
So what's the philosophy here? I mean, do you want to, I mean, is it somehow easier to do the leading log resummation than doing the full calculations? I mean, all these calculations you say are matched, but if you didn't do the matching, the results would be completely different.
No, I mean, this is, why should, I mean, I have to do the matching. I mean, what I want to do, I want to improve the, as best, I can do the best I can. That is, add to the best prediction that I have at the moment, that is this one, add the contribution from some higher orders of gluon emission. That, I mean, why I want to do that? Because I've seen that at this at fixed order, you get the bulk of the effect from this soft radiation. So I say, okay, let's look what happens at all orders. The answer is that in the end, the result is not bad because if I have only an increase of 6%, it is in the end in the uncertainty, if you want, as Robert was saying, in the uncertainty of the next to leading order result. At the Tevatron, now I didn't want to show.
Well, let me just push Keith's question a little bit because it may be the source of the confusion. I think in your next to next to leading log, you have the full content.
Of course, yes. Matching means exactly.
Plus.
Yes, of course. When I say matching, I mean that I take the next to leading logarithmic term. I expand it up to second order. I subtract and then I add the full. Next to leading order result. So when I say matching, I mean that I always subtract what to avoid double counting. So this is I should call it next to leading log plus next to leading order. This is the correct way here. I mean, I didn't want to write.
Can I ask a question before this one goes away? You say that the soft and collinear is most important, that's the stuff that's summed. I therefore conclude that leading order plus leading log should include almost everything that's important in next to leading.
Yeah, that was Martin's question. And
it doesn't, according
no,
to the
what I'm saying is that soft and virtual is important. Because virtual in the hierarchy of soft emission, virtual is one. Hard is 1/n. Okay, so virtual is a delta of 1 on minus z, so it's 1. So it's more important than hard effects. So what I'm saying is that soft and virtual effects are important. In fact, here, if I compare leading log that doesn't include the virtual at one loop with next leading order, I see that they are not, this is not a good approximation for this.
So almost everything is coming from what you call virtual.
It's half and half, I would say, virtual and real. It's both. You have to actually. It is known that the K factor for X production at next linear order, it is a very big part of it is from this the virtual.
Doesn't leading logs? That's an exponential of something that includes virtual corrections.
No, the virtual is outside. This prefactor is this prefactor is approximated, okay, but still it is not logarithmically enhanced, so that it's less.
So this prefactor is sensitive to
This prefactor is an approximation of the full three loop. If you want Robert amplitude, is an approximation of the full three-loop result that you don't know how good it is.
Then I conclude that the argument that was previously given by the large top limit works beyond the top threshold.
Look, I mean, here my point, maybe I'm too rude, but my point is that here I stop at 400, 300, 400. I don't care what happens beyond. Okay, here I show you only up to one TeV, just to show you the pattern, the behavior of the K factors.
Yeah.
But I put a cut here.
I don't need your excuses. I just,
okay. No.
I just want to understand.
I mean, I don't care because beyond the 300,
So the argument is that this is not a good enough explanation for the success of this infinite post limit, because when you see that the bulk is given by source radiation that comes from virtual, then the argument is
somehow you.
So imagine that now you should calculate the sense of the. I don't know that. Yes, it's like you calculate the sense of the sense of the. Maybe that's not. No, it's not.
Okay, so. Can I go? So you have.
Yeah, I have two sensors.
Yeah?
I think that works on the direction of the. So no one knows how much
that's sorted in, how much. Okay. Well, I'm showing you. If you want, I can even show you. What comes from. So you are not convinced that the soft approximation is good?
Yes. So you said the virtual corrections are alone. How do you define the virtual corrections?
No, I define soft plus virtual. This is a well-defined approximation. Okay. Yeah, okay, but soft plus virtual is finite. I can define.
He doesn't know what comes from.
Look. Okay, so let's try to go to the numbers, okay? So these are the relative.
Basically, we are not so much interested in numbers. So
I mean, I'm trying to convince him.
We have the conception. Yes, you make a very special approximation and you have the full virtual.
Yes. Exactly.
A full virtual set of level of the hard part.
Yes. Okay.
So that is not completely factible.
No. I defined at the beginning of my talk what I mean hard. What I mean, but it's very well defined, because if you Mellin transform, they are very different behavior. Okay. So the virtual is one in Mellin space. The hard pieces are 1/n, 1/n squared.
But the only argument is that the wording that you call it soft may be a little bit misleading.
Okay, but I mean, once you define what you mean by soft virtual, I did it at the beginning of my talk. So.
But virtual, you mean the delta function?
Yes.
So that is not only virtual. You get also
delta from the real.
Yeah, okay. I take your calculation, I combine it with soft approximation, I find that poles cancel out, so I'm fine, okay?
Yes.
I predict the cross-section, I see that it works up to 2%, so I'm very happy. These are the differences, okay? These are the differences. If you work in n space, it's even better. You see that this is 5%. Relative difference are incredibly small with respect to the fixed order result. So
what is delta?
Delta is a relative difference between approximated and exact result with the scale dependence. So here I have next linear order, here I have next linear order. And you see that the central values for the SV and the SVC are below, always below 5%, even if you go at very high masses. For small X masses, it's even below 2%.
Yeah, so the real part of the soft
side. Yes, here I define my soft approximation in n space directly, which is the most natural way, because it's there that you see all these higher logs and that you resum them.
No,
the resummation.
The other thing I wanted to say is that you can get this 6 or 8% increase from the next to next linear calculations if you
you go to lower authorization scales, just, you know, take it in the local population, go to lower authorization scale, and you will get a 6 to 8% increase.
Yeah, okay, but I mean, why should I?
Well, if you buy this argument, if everything is dominated by small values of 1 minus 7, then you will say that you shouldn't choose authorization scale to be parametric to the order of 6 months. You should choose it parametrically lower.
No.
Then you will get exact agreement with the
factorization, yeah, okay, but this is an issue that is like the bottom issue. I mean, we can go on talking about where to put the factorization scale for hours, I think. For me, the factorization scale, the central value is the X mass, because this is my hard scale. And I put mu F and mu R central values around the X mass, then we can discuss how should I vary. This is, of course, dependent. But in my view, the central value is the X mass. This is one scale process. So.
But I don't think this is correct point of view. I mean, if you simultaneously argue two things, that the correct factorization scale is the mass of the heat, and that the process is dominated by soft radiation.
Well, I mean, if soft radiation means radiation much smaller than the hard scale, which is the mass of the X.
Soft radiation means that in fixed order results, you have log of mh squared 1 minus z squared divided by mu f squared.
Yeah, okay, but you integrate over them. You don't have control over the upper limit is the mass of the X. There is no other scale in the process. There is an integral over Z. What do you do? You take mh over 10 or over 20 or which value? I mean, you don't know.
Take a varying scale, mh times 1 minus Z.
Yeah, but Z is integrated.
You can do
but you integrate.
You integrate over. Yeah. Look, I mean. You can do, if you want, I give you the program, you try, you see. I don't think this is...
certainly know that you just got, like, picking Argos to jets. Best scale where everything's flat is the jet PT2. And that would be square root of S hat over 4.
Okay, so...
It's equivalent to Higgs mass over 4, so I'm a little surprised.
Yeah, okay, but that you can... Okay, that's fine. You can say that the scale is a little bit... lower than the one, if you want, I can buy it. But you cannot. I mean, here you can say, okay, I this is the Tevatron, for example. You can go even below here. Here we change the scale from 1/2 to 2. You can decide that you don't like it and you take it from 1/4 to 4, for example. This is I don't really. Have anything against this. This is very completely arbitrary. And the way you study, you define your uncertainty is, to some extent, depends on your, I mean, this is a common way of doing things. You can decide another one, that's fine. What I don't like is to put mh 1 minus z times 1 minus z. That I don't think is...
So in this part, 1/2 is at the bottom, or...
Sorry?
So the cross section part is less.
Yes, when you take no smaller scale, it increases. It goes like alpha s.
So had you applied this philosophy at next leading order, would you have done a better job? Would you have been closer to the next leading order?
Well, of course, but this is of course the effect is positive. You lower the scale, you increase. But this is. Every process you could do something like this, when it doesn't teach me anything, because it's clear I have a positive effect. I lower the scale of alpha, I increase, I get an increase, and then I'm happy. I mean, I don't agree with this, but that's fine. You can, if you want, you can. Okay, so let's go to the final part of this first part of the talk. That is, so now we did all this this exercise, we did these very tough calculations. Okay, so what is now the residual theoretical uncertainty on the total cross-section? So, of course, we have discussed now the scale dependence. This is one issue. The other issue is this large m-top approximation. So what is my point? My point is the following. And next leading order, we have seen... the plot from Robert, the approximation works well. And my interpretation is that it works well because the cross-section is dominated by soft radiation that is weakly sensible to the heavy top loop. So the dominance of soft contributions persists at next to leading order. So my conclusion is that it's natural to expect that this approximation works well also at higher orders. However, there is a message, and here I repeat what Robert was saying, that the message is that you have to use the exact Bohr cross-section to normalize your result. In this way, you get a residual uncertainty that maybe a bit optimistically, but I estimate in around about 5%. The final important issue concerning the theoretical uncertainty is the one from Parton distributions. So at next linear order, you can compare X production from CTEC6 and MLST 2002, and you see that these results agree very well. At the moment, if you want to do a consistent calculation, you can rely only on two next linear order Parton distribution sets, that is MLST and Alekhine. So I've tried to make a comparison, and the results are not very nice. Why? Well, because you find pretty large differences. So the Alekhine results are larger than MRST, and the difference goes from about 8% for MH100 to 2% for mass of the X200. So for the moment, let's forget about the tevatron, because at the tevatron we know that the gluon is probed at larger X, where you have a larger uncertainty. But the fact that at the LAC you have these big differences, and here these differences are studied in this plot by comparing Alekhine and MRST gluon-gluon luminosity, normalizing to MRST, and you see that these differences are either increasing with the order. So this is somehow worrisome, because you do all this job, and then in the end you end up with an intrinsic problem that you don't know how to solve. Notice that both these sets are using the same approximated three-loop kernels. So this is not a problem of the approximation. So one point I want to say is that in some respect, Alekhine analysis is more consistent, because he uses only DIS data, whereas MRST uses also JET data where you have predictions that are not only at next linear order. So in this respect, their analysis is less consistent.
What are the uncertainties on the PDS from Alekhine if you just put them on this plot?
Sorry?
Yeah.
So. This is the, I forgot to say, so MRST do not quote the uncertainties at next linear order. Alekhine has an uncertainty which is plotted here, and it is something about 2%. So what I think is that this is underestimated, because he says that the theoretical error are smaller than experimental error, and I think this is a very optimistic view. Nevertheless, you see that they are just not consistent with each other, the two sets. So the conclusion is that there are problems that hopefully will be solved in the future. For them, so when these problems will be solved, you can reach an accuracy for the total cross section which is about of order of say 10%. So this is the conclusion for this point.
So does Alekhine use DIS data also only DIS data next to the order?
No, next to next. So that's why I say that his analysis is more consistent. Because. Also a next to the order, yes.
Okay, so the difference really might be due to different.
That's my. I think this is the point.
In very Australian data, those in the MRST, is that their regular distribution?
This is the latest release of MRST 2002. They perform leading, next to leading, and next to leading fit. Okay, so I conclude this part and I go to the next topic. If there are no questions, which is the spectrum of lakes. Here I present a work that we have done together with Catani, De Florian, and a graduate student in Florence, Bozzi. So what is the motivation? Up to now we have been discussing about a completely inclusive observable, but we know that the QT distribution is actually important. Actually, signal and background have different shape in QT, so a knowledge of this distribution can help to improve statistical significance and to devise better search strategies. Also, the XQT spectrum is expected to be harder than the gamma-gamma background, so this can be also important. So the studies of XQT distribution date back to very old papers by Inchliff and Novaes, and then going on up to the work by Balash and Wan. And very recently, also Berger and Chu wrote a paper and gave a prediction about this process, including even up to next leading logarithmic accuracy, but still doing the matching at leading order. So our work aims at including the most complete information which is available at present, that is next to leading logarithmic resummation, small QT, and fixed order perturbation theory at next to leading order. And possibly, I will try to convince you to improve the resummation formalism. So let's go very fast here to the... So in order to understand the physics of the transverse momentum distribution, you have to distinguish whether the transverse momentum is large, that is of order of the max or the mass of the X, or it is small. So of course, to have QT different from zero, the X has to recall again one part, and so the leading order starts at order alpha S cube. And this calculation has been done exactly, and keeping the top mass dependence, and this calculation shows that you can use the large and top approximation as long as both the transverse momentum and the mass of the X are smaller than the mass of the top. So here we are safe because we will consider always the smaller values of QT with respect to M top. So in this limit, next to linear order corrections have been computed by Zoltan Kunst, De Florian, and myself, implementing loop amplitudes from Smith and real Bremsstrahlung amplitudes from Kaufmann and collaborators. And using the subtraction method, we got a Parton level Monte Carlo program which can study any infrared safe quantity in the X plus jets topology. So now let's go to see what happens in the small QT region. So in the small QT region, this is the most important region because it's there that the bulk of the events are expected. In this region, you have large logarithmic contributions that appear of this form that originate again from soft and collinear radiation. That is, when you force your X to have small transverse momentum, the partons that recoil against the X are forced to be either soft or collinear, and the perturbative calculation is not reliable. Here you see the prediction from our next leading order code in the small QT region. The leading order goes to plus infinity, and the next leading order goes to minus infinity, thanks to there is an unphysical peak due to the compensation of positive leading and negative subleading logarithmic contribution. So this is a very general problem that is very well known, that is also present in Drellian, or in whatever process where you produce a high mass system at low transverse momentum. So the way out is again the resummation. Note that here the resummation is necessary. I mean, I want to make this point because in the case of the total cross section, if you want the resummation, it's just an improvement of your result. You can rely on the next leading order result and you can live without the resummation. Here, you cannot live without resummation because your perturbative result is really at the edge of, you are really going at the edge of the phase space somehow. So what is the solution? The solution is the resummation. So in this region, what you have to do, you have to decompose your distribution. Here I consider a general process where Q squared is the, for example, the Drellian, where Q squared is the invariant, the hard scale of the process. So you split your Fourier transformation, and then you have coefficients which are C, which are convoluted with the Parton distribution and evaluated at scale 1 over B, and a Sudakov 4 factor. The Sudakov 4 factor can be written in this form and resum these contributions from soft and collinear emission at all orders. So these coefficients A, B, and C can be computed perturbatively, and in the case of the quark and the gluon channel, both A1 and A2 and B1 are known since many years. The coefficient C1 is process dependent and has been computed for many processes. And actually, only three years ago, together with De Florian, we have given the general formula of the next leading log coefficient B2, which appears here. So I said that I have this.
B2 for Q bar and glue glue?
Yeah, we gave the general form. Because as I'm going to explain now, this coefficient is process dependent. So so now I try to convince you that I'm going to present a kind of improvement of the standard resummation formalism, which dates back to the pioneering papers by Dave, John Collins, and Sterman. So what is the point? Well, the first point is that these coefficients are process dependent. So this means that whatever process you consider, you have to do another calculation to fix these resummation coefficients. This is unpleasant because these coefficients should control soft and collinear emission, so should be universal. The second point is that the integral over the impact parameter involves an extrapolation of.
So I